Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. Businesses of all shapes and sizes, from local, homegrown establishments to massive corporations, must shoulder an immense amount of responsibility when faced with any decision. This burden is one based on influence, as the actions of an institution can concretely affect the lives of the individuals they are meant to serve. In the particular case of the environmental disarray much of the world faces today, companies, especially larger ones, must examine the role they choose to play in contributing to or standing against the phenomenon that is climate change. On May 10th, I attended a forum at Fordham University called Divest Invest New York, The Business Case. It gathered a panel of experts on sustainability and economics. They exchanged thoughts and experiences surrounding the climate-related responsibility faced by businesses in the rapidly changing 21st century, one that becomes more substantial not only by the day, but each time a corporation remains complicit in the degradation of natural resources, even if its support of harmful and unsustainable practices is the result of a more indirect allocation of capital. As panelist David Levine, director of the American Sustainable Business Council, put it, the conversation sought to define how businesses can do well by doing good. Prior to the panel, I had the chance to sit down with Mr. Levine, who provided even more of his roadmap to a more sustainable economy. Following the panel, I spoke with Mary Cleaver from the Cleaver Company and the Green Table, and Ivan Frischberg, the first VP of Sustainability Banking from Amalgamated Bank. Here are some excerpts from our conversations.
I'm David Levine, the CEO and co-founder of the American Sustainable Business Council, which is a council of business organizations and companies now representing over 250,000 businesses that advocate for a sustainable economy, an economy otherwise known as triple bottom line, people, planet, profit. And so we work to bring business leaders forward to speak on the key issues of our time and to engage with the White House, Congress, state legislatures, you know, city councils, as well as to speak out in the media telling the story about how business can do well by doing good. And so we are really looking for, you know, the ability to sort of address key climate issues, which is why we're here today at this forum, understanding that there's a tremendous business impact that's being felt by businesses, by climate change or extreme weather. Call it what you want, but the key is that, you know, one in five businesses that we polled, small businesses, said that they've already been impacted, and that was 3 years ago now. And so, and most of them, 60% plus, have believed that it's important for government to take action. We've seen an incredible growth in the green economy or sustainable economy. You know, so if you go across the sector, you sort of the growth now by some funds and the like, we track now $8.1 trillion since 2009 in the green economy. So from energy to life systems like water, other technologies, you know, to community investments and the like. So we're seeing incredible growth. You see growth in specific sectors, in renewable energy. You see growth in cleaning products, 20% compounded annual growth. In cosmetics and personal care products, 10% compounded annual growth. In those areas that are healthier, safer, and the like. Why? Consumers want a healthier, safer set of products. They want a healthier, safer community. And so buying products and supporting businesses that are advancing those are more front and center for them these days. So there's incredible investment opportunities that we've seen, incredible growth and innovation by business on these fronts. But now I think we're confronting a set of issues coming from Washington, D.C. in particular, with the dismissal and the recognition of climate change as an issue, the undermining of the Clean Power Plan, the possible removal from the Paris Accord, you know, and we see tremendous concern from our business leaders. You know, ASBC, the American Sustainable Business Council, had over 500 businesses signed on to a letter now that has over 1,000 businesses saying, keep the Paris Accord. Over 1,000 businesses stood up and said no to the Keystone Pipeline. So we see businesses willing to put their brands on the line and say, and these are businesses not necessarily in the renewables industry that have a direct profit to be gained by the drive towards renewables, but are saying this is what's good for business and the economy overall. It's important that businesses start to really speak out on these issues, and that's what we're seeing through the American Sustainable Business Council.
And how did you become involved? Why did you make this your life's work?
The key was that when looking around, we saw that the question of why we weren't making more progress towards what seemed to be common sense solutions, whether it's addressing income inequality or key environmental issues or workplace issues and the like. And what we saw was the argument was always being made as bad for business. And so what we said was, wait a second, there's so many values-based businesses that think about more than short-term profit at all costs, that believe in protecting the worker, believe in protecting the environment. And so what we did was said, here's the opportunities to bring these businesses together so that we can make the different business case for a sustainable economy.
And how important is the consumer?
They're driving this big time. You know, think of it this way, you know, what consumer, you know, if the consumer is impacted by climate change, they're not out there shopping. If the consumer walks into a store, are they, you know, say, let me purchase the most toxic product you have, or are they going to say, give me the healthier, safer product for my kids, for my family, for my community? So consumers going out there and using the power of the dollar to support buying the healthier, safer products, but also supporting the businesses that are standing up for what's right for society. That's a key opportunity we have.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. David Levine, American Sustainable Business Council.
I'm Mary Cleaver of the Cleaver Company and the Green Table in New York City.
Your business, which is based on local food in New York State, and you have a restaurant, the Green Table, if you could share with us why you're so committed to that and why this connects to sustainability and to making a difference with climate issues.
Yeah. The industrial food system that we have in this country is a big contributor to climate change. Bill McKibben said that our food comes marinated in fuel to the table. We used to have a solar system of agriculture where the sun would grow the grass and the cows would eat the grass and then they would fertilize the soil and we'd have healthier soil. We don't do that any longer. We keep animals in confined animal feeding operations. We keep them in feed lots with hundreds and hundreds of animals being fed antibiotics and hormones to keep them healthy because they don't want to eat the grain that has been produced with lots and lots of fossil fuels and chemicals to feed them. I moved to New York in the late 70s, and I was surprised to find that there were no local tomatoes in New York City in the month of August, as I had grown up in the Northeast and was used to eating food that was grown here when it was in season. And I also have come to understand that it's very difficult. We now own a farm in Washington County and grow food for our restaurant. But it's very difficult for producers to get off the farm into the marketplace of New York City where we have a huge population. So I became very involved in trying to help producers get their product distributed into the marketplace of New York City with a service called Farm to Chef that we started just in the early years of this 21st century. It was really the first one, but we now have over 15 to 20 local distributors bringing in local product from around. I call local within driving distance of the city. You can drive there in a day and
right.
back. We can drive here from our farm and back in a day, just barely, but.
How does that translate into business model and how this becomes a motivation in a way if we're speaking to people about why one not only in a moral sense should be doing these things and giving back to our own communities and putting those local dollars back in, but also how this works and what you've seen with your own business and with setting up this kind of framework.
There's no reason that we can't have capitalism with values. My business has always been driven by the notion that we need to be contributing to a healthier world rather than destroying the world that we live in. All the decisions that we make, we think about for example, with waste, the best way to address waste is to not create it in the first place. So we try to not over-purchase, not over-produce. When we do have waste, we try to get it to homeless shelters or back into the soil and in the form of compost. We work towards supporting producers who are good stewards of the land, who appreciate the air quality and the water quality and are interested in developing their soil through organic and biodynamic growing practices rather than chemical inputs. We want to make sure that we know what we are eating was eating. We want to know that the animals that we feed our children and our clients and ourselves are raised in a healthy way on pasture or are eating non-GMO grains, if they require grains. I've been a chef. Well, I've just always loved to cook. When I moved to the marketplace of New York City, I discovered that being an artist wasn't going to be very self-sustaining for me, so I turned to the culinary arts as a way to support myself. I thought, well, people are always going to eat, so I can cook. I like to feed people. I think it civilizes us to gather around the table and talk with one another. Food creates community, something we've lost somewhat. Farmers markets are a wonderful way for people to meet their producer and learn about where their food comes from, how it's grown. And you develop community that way, and you realize that what you do affects other people, and what you buy affects how those people live, and how you spend your dollar changes the world. These things are important. Food is, it nurtures us. I mean, as I grew in my career, I think it's my career as a chef grew, the food supply went further and further into chemical industrial production, and I began to really investigate where all my food came from. I wanted to know, because feeding is nurturing. It gives us life, and so we have to be feeding people healthy food, and then again, the environment is what gives the food life, and animals, and all this is, we're all interconnected.
Yes, we are. You are sitting on this panel as a business owner, representing how one can have a sustainable business and one that is contributing in beneficial ways to community. I'm just wondering if there's anything you want to share with us about kind of the economy in New York State around local food production and farming, things that you've seen potential in the state. Because, you know, we're talking about New York State, but that also connects us to other food economies around the country.
I can tell you that it's very challenging to run an economically viable, diversified family farm. Our industry is shifted towards, well, our country has the belief that food ought to be cheap, and the true cost of food is not calculated in the cost of a processed meal. We have to understand that food is grown in fields. Workers need to be paid. Farmers need to make a living. We need to keep the topsoil on the earth. The true cost of American food is much greater than what you see in your supermarket generally.
You shared with us on the panel that 50% of our topsoil has been lost and that can't be replenished until the next ice age, right? Because every inch of topsoil, I think, takes thousands of years, right? What does that mean? We've lost 50% of our topsoil. What does that mean we're facing?
We're facing a serious need to rethink our agricultural system and return to the understanding that soil is where life comes from. And we need to treat it with respect, and we need to have it, and that our oceans are being killed by chemicals that are being washed down the rivers into the sea. Fish migrations are being affected by the water rise and the climate rise, and the water systems are abused. We need to think about health. We have to think about nature, support it, rather than destroy it.
Is there anything else you want to share about the times we're living in right now, about how you're dealing with the climate crisis that we're facing and the different assaults around us?
Well, the best thing that we can do is to try and support a healthy food supply, because really climate change is at the end of your fork. And we really do, everyone needs to learn how to cook, needs to have a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture farm that they work with to purchase food, shop at your farmer's market when you can. If you do not have one and you try to encourage your local stores and supermarkets to source locally, they will respond to consumer demand. How you spend your money will change the world, and so I urge people to really think about how you direct your dollar. If you spend it in the regional farm and food economy, you will be putting 3 or 4 or 5 times that dollar back into your regional economy, which will help grow jobs and keep topsoil on the earth. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Thank you for asking me to hear my opinions about this.
You're welcome.
Come to the Green Table, our restaurant in Chelsea Market. Our farm is in Hartford, New York. It's called Green Table Farms.
Thank you.
I'm Mary Cleaver, the Cleaver Company, the Green Table, and Green Table Farms.
Hi, my name is Ivan Frischberg, and I lead the sustainability banking for Amalgamated Bank. And Amalgamated Bank is a nearly 100-year-old bank based in New York. It was actually started by a labor union to serve the immigrant workforce that was part of the union and couldn't get banking services elsewhere, and we continue to be majority labor owned, and we are sort of proud bankers for the progressive movement. And so that certainly includes sustainability and all of the issues with how we keep a safe, healthy planet going forward.
We often hear that banking and business doesn't really mix with being responsible and having some sort of moral compass, the way that business is being categorized. So I'm just wondering if you can share with how this model is working and why this is so important with the times we're living in, what we're facing around the climate.
Climate is, I think, the fundamental issue that we need to address. It's the great risk that threatens all of our economy, all of our people. I think there's a special calling for all companies, all banks, all manufacturers, everybody to kind of think about their role in this space. And there's been great leadership around the Paris Climate Agreement and other things. Problem is that there's still a lot of businesses that they say they want to do the right things, they say climate change is important, but still a lot of what they're doing is sort of the same old business that got us into the problems that we have. So the way we look at it is that businesses that do better serve their customers better. And it's about who your customers are and what their ambitions and goals are. So we're very clear for ourselves, you know, we bank the progressive community. And that means from the investment side to the commercial banking side, the regular consumer on the street, but the people who bank with us tend to be people who are doing good work in the world. Whether they're a teacher or they work at a nonprofit organization or they're an organization that's committed to affordable housing or to environmental advocacy, we want to help those organizations do better. And the more we focus on that and being good financial partners to them, we think not only we have a better world, but we also think that's good business for us too. For us, we're very focused on how we bank the progressive community. I do think there is, if you look at some of the conversation we've had today about big banks, and you look at an example like Wells Fargo, you know, they take about 2% of their portfolio of lending, and what they do is they don't serve us, but they're serving some energy companies that are building fossil fuel infrastructure, which is actually quite dangerous to us. And so I think it's the call for some of these businesses to say, okay, great that you do these other lending things that you do. It's great that you are doing a lot of home mortgages. All banks need to and should do that stuff. But it's also not good that you're doing the kind of lending that really is harmful or hurtful to us. And, you know, some banks have recognized this in terms of, for example, Bank of America and mountaintop removal. So they, after advocates sort of pointed out the real harm that was coming from that, they said, okay, yeah, that's not what we're about. So we don't want to do that anymore. And so I think for all across the banking world, the call is to say, okay, we all said Paris Climate Agreement and the emission reductions that were inherent in that were really important. Now we need to start banking that same way. And so it was something that we decided was important to do at Amalgamated Bank, to sort of lead that effort and to put our money where our mouth was.
How do you communicate the urgency of this issue?
The Paris Climate Agreement set a target, and for a while now the world has worked to keep the world below 2 degrees centigrade of temperature increase. In the Paris Agreement, they also said, but we should be moving more towards 1.5 degrees. There were new research just came out from the scientific community saying, actually, it seems like we're more on target to exceed the 1.5 within only the next 10 years, a relatively short window. You know, it could be a little shorter, could be a little bit longer, but things are warming up way quicker than we thought. And so alongside that, you look at where this sort of the emissions come from and how they extend out into the future. Rainforest Action Network, Sierra Club, Oil Change International, a bunch of groups did a report last year that showed in the 3 previous years, the big banks globally had put $785 billion into fossil fuel infrastructure. $785 billion in 3 years into infrastructure that will last for generations. So they make those loans, the pipeline or the power plant or what have you gets built, and it's going to be pumping and dumping for, you know, to the point where I have grandkids, right? So these are long, long-term investments. The scientific reality is we can't afford that from a carbon budget perspective. We're already so close to the threshold, right, that 1.5 or 2 degrees, that those kind of long-term fossil fuel investments will really push us way over the edge and blow up the carbon budget that we've all been so concerned about. Recently, we became a B Corp. It's a pretty rigorous certification that goes with any business that says you across a whole range of issues, not just environmental sustainability, but how you treat your workers and solid waste and energy consumption, all sorts of things. A very, very aggressive survey to say that your company is really adding benefit to the world. It's not just profiting shareholders or owners or whoever is making money off it, but it's actually a benefit to the community and to the world at large. And so we think that being a B Corp, serving other B Corps, thinking about the businesses that have a greater value to the world is, first of all, it's a great thing to do, and we should all be kind of investing in those companies. But there's a lot of research out there that also says those companies that are aggressively thinking about their sustainability, their environmental and governance issues, and are more proactive, are actually better companies. They deliver a better return to shareholders than the companies that are just playing it fast and loose and not thinking about anything but the one bottom line. So a triple bottom line companies often do better than those that are just thinking about financial return. And so we think it's both. It's who we want to be to serve that world, but we also think it's where our customers and where the progressive community should be focused its efforts is sort of in this B Corp triple bottom line world. So you look at something like an investment into clean energy, you can make money off of that. You are adding value through clean energy that's replacing dirty energy, but you're also doing it in a way that's taking care of the workers and the community that you're investing in. And so you're kind of going, let's look at a broader view of the impact that we're having and make sure that we're providing benefit in all those areas.
And why did you decide to focus on these things for yourself? What has been the imperative for you?
My background is in advocacy and policy, specifically working on climate and energy issues. And I do that because I have 2 young kids and I think about the future. But I joined Amalgamated and I sort of took this opportunity because I think increasingly, as everyone gets frustrated with our politics and what's happening in Washington, especially now, that we can accomplish a lot through these sort of institutions where they control resources and money and the way we do business. And so I think there's a lot to be done in the next few years in the private sector to change these things. And so for me, being within an institution like Amalgamated that's committed to that and is willing to help put pressure on the rest of our friends in the financial sector to kind of do better and to be different, I think that can be pretty powerful.
How does activism and shutting down, for instance, Chase Banks recently, by activists who are a part of the divest movement. So what is the connection between that, this business sector, and then policy?
All of these banks and so many players in the financial services world have signed on to the objectives of the Paris Climate Agreement and supported the Paris Climate Agreement. But changing the way you do business can be hard. I mean, legitimately so. And so it's going to take a lot of different sorts of efforts to change that behavior. If we do, and if we're successful, and the banks start to live up to their sort of commitments in terms of a low carbon economy and say we're not going to build the high carbon economy, that the payoff is huge. But I think it takes individuals saying I'm going to push my bank or I'm going to be willing to change my bank. It takes institutions to be able to say those things. It takes investors to talk to the companies, the banks that they're invested in. I think there's great policy work being done on the credit rating agencies to say, hey, some of this debt that you're doing when you make an investment into energy transfer partners or what have you, it's not really great debt. And then there's risks that are associated with it. Maybe we weren't scoring correctly. So I think there's a lot of work that is policy, that's activism, that's just regular corporate engagement. And people have to find their own, what they can do. But I think through doing all of those things as a community, we can change what the big banks are doing, and that will benefit us all.
Thank you so much.
Ivan Frischberg, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Conversations from the Divest Invest New York, the Business Case panel that was on May 10th at Fordham University in New York City. The speakers included moderator Denise Patel, coordinator Divest Invest Network, Matthew W. Patsky, CFO, CEO, and portfolio manager Trillium Asset Management, Mary Bove, executive director 350.org, Ivan Frischberg, first vice president sustainability banking, Amalgamated Bank, Mary Cleaver, founder and CEO of Green Table, David Levine, director, American Sustainable Business Council. The event was organized by American Sustainable Business Council, 350.org, New York State Sustainable Business Council, New York Communities for Change, and the Divest Invest Network, part of the Divest New York Coalition, sponsored by the Dorothy Day Center for Service and Justice, Fordham University. From the kitchen table, out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel. Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel and assistant producer, Babe Howard. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.